TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's raised by wolves.
Hello, welcome in. Another edition of Raised by Wolves. Danny Cunningham and Dane Moore coming at you as the Wolves are 14-22, play tonight. Later tonight, the Carmelo Anthony-led Portland Trailblazers are in town, which is not something I thought I'd be saying, but here we are in
2020. He's actually good.
Yeah.
I know that people are like, oh, that's stupid. Watch it. On the offensive side, objectively, been a very good basketball
the
player.
The defensive side is...
But they're bad at defense,
yes.
Period.
That's been Carmelo for a while, and I don't think anyone expected him to go into that situation and fix what was going on defensively with them.
Right.
But he's been good offensively.
It's, I don't know if you got a chance to watch their last game. People probably saw him hit the game winner.
I saw the game winner. I didn't get a chance to watch the whole game.
Best player on their team.
28 points on 17 shots or something, which you'll take that from anybody, let alone a year 17 Carmelo Anthony.
I mean, I've, as anyone has, you know, mocked the Carmelo Anthony over the past, saga over the past few years, but it's because it didn't work. What he was doing in Houston was obviously hurting the team. What he was doing in Oklahoma City was not as obviously, but was hurting that team as well. I mean, I feel like, you know, just with Portland is kind of the late games, I get a chance to watch them, you know, a lot.
And over the last few years, they've always been a fun watch for
totally.
a 9:30 Central Time start.
Oh, I love watching
at the
Dame.
End of the night. Like,
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know. The Wolves have only played the Blazers the one time this year, and Carmelo didn't play in that game. So maybe Wolves fans haven't got to see him, but it's not like throwback to Denver Melo, but it's kind of like when he was solid in New York.
Yeah.
To me, it looks like the same player, which is just would never have guessed.
Well, I think it was Kirk Goldsberry put out a thing where he's been doing tracking the leading scorers by zone.
Yeah.
And the right inside the 3-point arc on the right wing is Carmelo Anthony. Like right now. It's unbelievable.
It's just his game. Like he's just so comfortable going 1-2 into a pull up from there.
Yeah.
And if it's not tightly contested, he can make it at a decent rate.
And that's all you can ask of him at this point.
Right.
So Dane, what I wanted to get into today with, we always talk about what's going on with the Wolves, but we're almost at the halfway point here where tonight I think is game 37 or whatever.
Sure.
So we're inching close to that halfway point. I want to go back and I want to read off some statements or some truths about the Wolves as they are right now.
Oh.
And I want to get both of our reaction to how we would have reacted if we were told that back in September or early October prior to the season starting. Yes, I came up with these.
Okay.
You have not heard these.
No.
So what we're going to, the first one I have is, what if I would have told you that halfway through the season, the Wolves are 15th in defensive rating? How would you have reacted?
I would have reacted. My first thought would have been David Vanterpool.
Yeah.
And that the process has largely been the reinvented defensive scheme has been one that not only fit the roster, but the players were taking to. I also would have guessed that Karl-Anthony Towns had made a major stride forward on the defensive.
Which I think one of those things is true and one of those things isn't exactly true.
It's kind of weird. It's
so interesting to think about how we got to this point, because for such a significant chunk of this defense, they were just not good defensively. They were good early on, and then they got awful, and then they became good again. So
15th, perfect.
Yeah, right in the middle. Yeah. It truly makes sense how they've gotten to 15th, but it's been such a roller coaster of a ride in actually getting there, I think.
It really has, and I mean, we'll call it good, bad, good.
Yeah.
Even at the beginning of the year, the good part was perplexing because it was gifting dominant scorers like D'Angelo Russell, a Kyrie Irving, a James Harden, a Bradley Beal, that mid-range shot. And
yeah, all those guys went for 40 plus. A couple of them had 50 or more.
Exactly. And it was just, it's a fascinating. Okay, so the Timberwolves' defensive scheme is to take away the shots that they want to take.
They want to essentially force opponents into taking the least efficient shots that they can get them to take.
Because the Wolves are prioritizing getting to the rim and shooting threes, so on defense, they want to take away the opponent from getting to the rim and shooting threes. Obviously, the left over shots there are largely mid-range shots,
yes,
particularly if they're contested. I just find it, it's such a dispellment of the hot hand theory to believe in that, to say, I don't know if you've got the chance to read this yet, but Britt Robson wrote a big thing on David Vanderpool today and the defensive scheme. And within it, Vanderpool says, if they take 50 of the shots that we want them to take and they make 49 of them, we'll live with it because we trust the process. And that makes sense, like in a statistical vacuum. But I personally, and I don't know, I mean, I'm interested. I believe at some point, once a guy is hot, taking those shots, even if it is the mid-range shots, even if it's the tough ones, it's hard for me to say, yeah, we should let him take 49 of those.
Well, it's at some point, I think you have to, sure, maybe you want them taking those shots, but you can't let the same person continue to take those shots. If
that
makes sense.
If
because Portland's in town tonight, let's say they force Dame Lillard into 50 mid-ranges and he takes 49. Well, that's a problem because you let the same guy do that.
Right.
Now, if Damian Lillard starts to really heat up, you still want to allow mid-range shots. You just say, okay, see the guy wearing number zero? He's not allowed to take any of the shots anymore. That's what has to change. But
right.
it does make sense, I think, that that's said because they are, and Ryan's said this a ton of times, they're a very much process over results oriented group. Mm-hmm. So it does make sense that that is kind of their line of thinking, where we had the right process, the results just weren't in our favor this time, but next time we think they will be. That makes
right.
sense to me that they go along those lines of thinking, but I'm more so with you in terms of the like you said, the hot hand theory, where it's, okay, that dude is torching us. We need to make somebody else beat us.
Like,
right?
He might be, for his career or for the season, a 44% shooter on pull-up mid-range jump shots. But after he's made his first four, then what is he – should we still assume that his next 10 are going to be 44%? I don't personally believe that.
I'm with you there. You can't let that guy get hot.
Right. I think that's a thing. I think it's a philosophical, you know, sort of debate.
But
I believe in that sort of thing in basketball. Now, what I'm sure Vanderpool would say goes, you know, how many times is it going to be that we actually let them shoot the 50 of that shot in a row? Or even the 14 that I just said. It's like the vast majority of the time that's going to work. I think my problem I had with the defense, quote unquote, being good at the beginning of the year was they gave up a little bit too much of that.
Yeah.
And it led me to questioning it of, you know, how stout can this be? And I don't know. Then it really fell off into just that questioning became fair. And now we see some more of this connectivity for this latter third. And you're like, okay, maybe you're right.
Yeah.
Maybe you're right. Just kind of be solid is enough. You know, be consistent. And it'll add up. Maybe that's just what defense is.
Well, and I even think that with the pieces that they have, solid is kind of the best that they can get. They've got some decent defenders, but it's not as if this is a team loaded with all NBA defense talent. I mean, you have Robert Covington, but outside of that, there's no one that is just a lockdown defender. Now, if you at some point maybe add a couple guys that can both shoot the ball, which we'll get to, I promise, and also play really strong defense, what they're doing now that has them at 15th gets them up to, I don't know, 7th. That's part of the process too, is you have to look at the pieces involved, where 15th, okay, maybe it's not quite the ceiling for this group, but it's certainly good enough.
What's enough? I guess that's my question. What's enough?
On this team, I think you should be satisfied with 15th right now with this team.
Sure. I guess bigger picture though, like, Are you putting, is a solid as enough scheme, does that put a ceiling on how good your defense can be?
I think that, and maybe this might
and
be
I don't
where,
know the answer.
Where you and I disagree, is I think you do have to be better than solid, but I think that scheme can get you to solid and personnel can take you over the top. And
I
think that the
That's
Wolves fine. Probably have the scheme where it can get a group of players to solid. But you need better personnel to get over the top. Where, I mean, we've seen teams that are good defensively that figure it out, and their scheme maybe can get them above solid, but they just don't have the pieces, and they can't win at the highest level because of that. At the end of the day, it's always going to come down to, yes, coaching matters, scheme matters, all of those things matter,
right.
But if you don't have enough talent, you can only get so far.
Milwaukee is the example, right?
Exactly. Milwaukee, or I mean, there are a number of teams that in the past have shown us that, but I think Milwaukee is the present day example where they've got the scheme, but I don't know that they have the talent to do it.
Right. Right. No. And so that's what is that's why this is going to be, you know, an ongoing process with Vanderpool and his schemes and Ryan and all that. It's just, it remains the most pertinent question as it applies to Timberwolves basketball this season and going forward is what can this team be defensively?
Yeah.
And specifically, what can it be with Karl Anthony Towns? Because I promise you that number with Karl Anthony Towns on the floor is not 15th in the NBA.
No, it is. It's bad.
It's very bad.
It's so, and part of that, Towns does deserve blame for part of that. But
it's
29th, I also think,
to be specific.
But I also think that Towns missing the stretch that he missed makes it look it makes it look a little bit worse than it actually is.
Yeah, it's just you have to apply so much context to defense.
Yes.
Right?
And it's not always, it very rarely is about specifically a singular player. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, Robert Covington's defensive rating is always going to be good when he's on the floor because he is a good defender. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's, okay, well, who is Towns always playing with? And those things have to be considered. I'm not trying to defend Towns as a good defender because I don't think he is. But you also have to consider other things.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's an unfair because I'm pretty sure the number specifically is 114.5 with him on the floor defensive rating.
Yeah, I looked it up last week. It's in that neighborhood. I don't know if that's specific.
And that's like
the
equivalent of like Cleveland, who's 29th in defensive rating. Yes. As a team for the whole. But yeah, like Cat was there during the really low times. And now this team has, not just because he's been out, started playing better defense of late. Or at least I don't think it's just because he's out. It's a little bit misrepresentative, but it's also now Cat's missed 11 games.
Yeah.
And it's been good. You know, they're first in defensive rating without it.
All right. So next one is we're going to stick with kind of this conversation, but we're going to flip it to the other side of the court is what if I would told you the Wolves so far would have been 23rd in offensive rating?
Actually, that would have surprised me a lot. Karl Anthony Towns, the worst the offense has been in Carl's career for a season was 13th.
Yeah.
Entering this year. And I always kind of viewed that as a floor. And I think that was his rookie year. I think it's been 10th pretty much. I've kind of drawn 10th as the floor for a Karl Anthony Towns led offense should be a top 10 offense just because he's that good. And I expected that. Not much higher than 10th, but I think misunderstood or, you know, didn't totally believe was going to happen is that they were going to shoot 45 threes a game and that these guys shooting them were going to be as bad as they are at shooting them. So that's the difference. I mean, that's a big difference.
Well, and Towns missing at this point a third of the season, basically. Right. That also has a huge impact because if Towns is in there, they're certainly better than 23rd. They've been dead last in the NBA since he's been out.
Right. I think with him, they were like 16th before he got hurt.
But they weren't overwhelmingly good with him in offensively.
Totally. Yeah. And even if it was right now and Towns had played the whole year and they were 16th.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised by that too, because, and to factor in that Wiggins has been solid.
Yeah.
This year. It's surprising to me the lack of offensive efficiency we've seen from this team.
And I do think that the thing that made sense and why you were a little bit higher on them offensively than I was at the start of the season was I thought that I didn't trust any of their three-point shooters, and I did think that they were going to bomb away in a way that they had. I believed that Ryan was going to be able to get them to stick to a certain system, even if it showed a lot of times that it just wasn't quite working because of who that personnel is.
Yeah.
I believed that he was going to be able to get them to do that. And like you said, they've missed a lot of three-pointers, and that's a big reason as to why that they're 23rd. The other big reason is Towns being out, which I obviously recognize, but just missing as many threes as they miss, it's hard for them to be really good like that.
Yeah, I think I just miscalculated that of like I remember writing before the season, I think Keelan Martin, who's on a two-way, is the best wing shooter on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And if I thought that, then why did I think that they would be okay at shooting, you know, or okay enough at shooting to be a top 10 offense? That doesn't, you know, that doesn't make sense. And I did underestimate the three-point volume too. So I think it's, you know, in hindsight, I believed it was going to come together better than what I knew. Because I mean, the one thing I've been saying for a long time is I'm like, with Josh Okogie, I mean, I have very big concerns about him as a shooter.
Especially
since day one.
Especially for me above the break. The corner, I'm actually okay with him taking some corner threes. Sure. Actually, I don't think he's terrible there. I'd have to go and double check the numbers, but he certainly is better there than from the wings.
I feel like him and Kata and Jarrett, it's all Like, that 2 feet makes a difference for them.
Kate is someone I absolutely think should be taking corner threes. And even Andrew. Andrew's been a good corner three shooter. Yeah,
Andrew shot like 47% on corner threes last year.
Yeah. He should be taking them. Yeah. He should be taking them.
Those are harder shots to get than above the break, obviously.
Well, and especially for Andrew, as someone who handles the ball far more than and I guess Jarrett handles the ball a lot too, but Josh is not a primary ball handler, and Kato certainly isn't either. So it's easier to get those guys' shots in the corner because you can set them up off passes where Andrew oftentimes is the center involved in the action.
Sure.
And that makes a difference. The other thing I think I would have thought, had you told me they'd be 23rd in offense, is that teams are just sending three guys at Carl on every single possession. I would have thought that as well. And my thought process would be Carl is doing everything that he can, but there are too many open shots for other guys that he can't pass up setting guys up.
And I kind of thought he'd try and fight through that a little bit more.
That's another fair thing to think. Yeah.
You know, thinking about that Houston game earlier in the year where they were like hard bringing the double on Cat every single time. And he passed out of it over and over again, because that's like the quote unquote smart pass. I just thought he would have had more of that. Like, I'm just going to rip through this double and try and like go up and draw a foul or still get a hook shot there. And he's, I mean, I guess to his credit, Carl's really trusted the system, you know, in that way by trusting the pass.
And that the Houston game that you bring up, he only took 15 shots in that game. And that was one of the games with Andrew Wiggins was not available. Yeah. I believe that was when he had a death in the family. Mm-hmm. So that's like, okay, Carl kind of needs to take more than 15 shots, but he passed out a ton from every time that he got the ball, at least in most times he got the ball.
Yeah, there was extra attention. Threes. Yes. He's forced more threes this year than he has twos.
Yes, certainly.
Which I guess maybe that makes sense, but he's a on the block can be a dominant offensive
weapon.
He can
be a dominant offensive weapon from anywhere.
Right.
Truthfully.
Right.
I don't think it's just the block. I think it's above the break. It's wherever you want to put him. I mean, they choose not to, and I understand why, but if you wanted to, he could be automatic from 17 feet.
Bottom of the line, a Cat shot from anywhere on the floor. Is
inside half court, yeah.
is better than basically anything else.
Yeah. All right. Next one is, what if I would have told you Carl Anthony Towns would sustain a legitimate serious injury for the first time in his career? He's missed 11 games. He, no matter what happens the rest of the way, he could play in every single game the rest of the way. He's going to play in the fewest amount of games in his career, because last year was the first time he didn't play in all 82, and he played 77, which he obviously can't get to this year. So what if I would have told you that would have happened?
You know, I've always had like two minds of that, where it's just 4 years of playing as much as he did. You kind of had this idea that he was just kind of one of those guys who's like made out of rubber, right?
Sure.
And you're like, I just don't, some guys are that way. Their bodies just can take more, and you just believe it. You expect that 77 kind of, again, as a four. But then I have this, you know, since I've been covering the team, where you're just a little bit closer to him, and you like, this sounds kind of dumb, but watching like the way that he walks and his big feet and like the way that he bends and stuff, there's something about him in that sense that looks susceptible to injuries. And I don't know, that's purely just my thinking about it, but I've always been like, man, I don't know, his feet are so big, they look so weird. Like, most 7-footers or a lot of 7-footers have a big foot injury at some point. I've always like thought about that in my head. That's not what his injury has been this year. It was a, you know, a knee sprain. But part of that was, I mean, think about how many times Carl has flown to the rim, got crushed, fell to the ground, like grabbed him, you know, his knee or his leg or whatever, and you've been like, it happens all the time. Mm-hmm. And he's always bounced back up, but you know, this most recent time, he didn't.
Yeah, and I think what's really been most interesting about Towns' durability really throughout his whole career is the first time he missed games were because of a car accident. Like, that's something that he had no control over. Like, you can talk about durability on the floor, whatever, but there's also real life you have to deal with, and that's actually what caused him to miss games. And he had a knee injury at the end of last year that I don't necessarily know how serious it was, and maybe it would have been something that he had fought through had he not missed games earlier in the season and wanted to keep a streak alive of an Iron Man streak.
Well, we just know for a fact that at the end of last season, they really lowered the threshold of what injured meant.
Yes.
From Taj Gibson to Luol Deng, you know, to up and down the roster, they held guys out.
Yes, and there's no question that this current knee injury is far more serious than the knee soreness he dealt with at the end of last
year.
And I think that it's really upsetting that he got injured, because he was on pace to just have a great season. He still will have a great season, but it kind of shines a light to this does actually happen. And I think that also part of it is Andrew Wiggins has been pretty durable too during his time here. I mean, he's played almost every game every year too. And so in Minnesota, we're kind of like, well, these guys just don't miss time.
Yeah. Maybe we set up an unrealistic expectation.
And I don't even think you can't look at it in a vacuum of Carl or Andrew, because it's okay. Your two highest usage guys never miss games ever. Yeah. And that's so rare in today's NBA.
But again, for us who are, I mean, I think you and I watch a lot of other games, but other fans who maybe the Timberwolves is all they watch.
Sure.
You just kind of expect that, right? You expect that if you were an Oklahoma City Thunder fan, you would be like, oh, well, Russell Westbrook misses time or whatever, you know, over the past years. It is common that guys miss a lot of time during the year.
Like stars. This is a little unfair, but Paul George and Kawhi Leonard in LA with the Clippers will miss more games combined this year. I'm willing to bet they will miss combined more games this year than Carl and Andrew have in their entire careers.
I was going to say for this year, they'll miss more games.
Oh, no doubt about that. Yeah. But like Carl and Andrew's entire careers combined will have missed less games than just Paul George and Kawhi Leonard this year. That's crazy to think about. But that's where we're at in the NBA right now.
Yeah, I don't know, man. This injury stuff is just right. I mean, you and I do. I tweeted about this yesterday. It's been hard and it's been annoying and frustrating as a fan to every day hear the questionable status on Carl to then get plugged back in to start. And you're like, well, what is this? What is happening? What is the injury? I understand the frustration. And then on the other side of the coin, not necessarily Minnesota, we have all this load management stuff. And there's just this, we have a real problem today with the gray area of what is injured and what is not. And there are HIPAA rules that apply to like the workplace where they don't have to share exactly what their injury are. Like that's a rule. The Timberwolves don't need to be completely transparent. But there's just this gray area. And again, not only Minnesota, the Clippers deal with the load management stuff all the time. We're learning with Kyrie in Brooklyn. It's this whole thing, what's going on there? Like
that might be the strangest situation of all these that we talked about.
But I guess my point is, and to Timberwolves fans is, again, like the Carl and Andrew not missing, like this is not an isolated incident. Like this weird stuff happens all the time in the NBA, and in particular is happening this season where it's just, you don't know if guys are going to play.
Yeah, happens far more often other places than it does here.
Yes.
Without question.
Or has in the past.
Yes, yes. And I also think that it makes sense for the Wolves this year. If Carl is injured like this in this type of season, what it's turned into, let him be 100%.
Oh, yeah, sure.
He needs to be as healthy as possible before he's back in. It does sound like he's close. Like, we might see him tonight. We might not. We might see him Saturday in Houston.
Yeah, and I would just, I would just say to people, it's like, we don't know either.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we have like a little bit more insight if we get to like see him walking around or maybe watching him do warm-ups where other people haven't. But like, it's not that we aren't asking the questions.
No.
They don't have to answer explicitly. Well, those are the rules.
And I get tweets every day, and I'm sure you do as well, where it's, is Carl playing? Like, what's wrong? Why don't we know anything about Carl?
Yeah. I understand it. And if it were me, again, gray area, I would try and be more transparent, because I think that frustration with the fan base is real and important to acknowledge. But I don't know. I'm not. That's not my decision.
Well, and I think also part of it started a little bit last year. Now, I understand a completely different regime now, different people in charge, all that. But the Robert Covington situation last year is going to give people nightmares about it, because he was day to day for 3 months and then had surgery and was done. Mm-hmm. And that's not what is going on with Carl, but that's what it was. And
it's only natural to draw that connection when you don't have substantial information to tell you otherwise.
All right. Next one that I have is Andrew Wiggins's flashes would be brighter than ever.
That wouldn't have surprised me as much.
Sure.
Because what you said is flashes. I always have anticipated flashes from Andrew Wiggins. Mm-hmm. I anticipated flashes this year. I did not anticipate this consistency. But I think at the beginning of the year, I believed that he would flash. And I think there was reason to believe that this team, they told us that they were going to apply much more focus to him, to bringing out the best of him. So if we have a baseline of knowing he's going to flash and we assume that they're going to do everything they can to get more out of him, yeah, I think that makes sense that he's flash brighter.
I think it makes sense, too. I do think that the consistency is at least a tiny bit surprising to a lot of people because of what he's been his entire career. And at some point when you've played as many games as you've played, you kind of become that person. And I'm not saying I necessarily agree with that line of thinking, but I understand that line of thinking. Like, if someone's played, you know, 500 plus games in the NBA, it's okay. That's kind of who you are, right?
Right. Yeah. This year's been so weird with him. I mean, really, I know it's their belief within the organization, and I believe this too, is that that extended time he missed with the death in the family followed up by his first bout with the flu.
Yeah.
That really threw him out of his rhythm. And they were like, crap, I hope when he gets back, like, that rhythm they can find again. And he didn't really. And now what has it been? 2 games he's been back, right?
Yeah.
Entering Portland. He doesn't have that rhythm either, you know? And
I also think the first time trying to find that rhythm again, there were a couple of other things that made it difficult for him to get back into the rhythm. Like Jeff Teague being back in the starting lineup, because that hot streak that he was on, the brightest flash that we saw coincided with Jeff Teague missing 4 games with an illness and then coming off the bench for a 5th. And then Andrew immediately went out and fit more than one piece back in together. And I think that is a factor into why it took so long to figure out a rhythm and why he hasn't looked the same since.
Yeah. And I think, as much as we should give Andrew credit for the brighter flashes, as a big time player, as the one of the best players on this team, as they refer to him as, he needs to be held accountable for. You need to be able to get in that rhythm quicker.
Yeah.
It can't be a week. It can't be 2 weeks. Okay, you were sick. Find your wind again after a game, maybe 2 games. Like tonight, Andrew Wiggins, you need to be back playing real. The basketball that you can play.
You need to, if Carl is still out tonight, which we truly don't know as we record this, you need to be the best player on the floor tonight.
Yeah.
Now, that might be a tough task with Damian Lillard on the other side.
It's not a tough task for him to be that on the Minnesota Timberwolves, though.
Exactly. And that's something that he needs to be. Will he be? I don't know. But that's something
that's
that
on
he,
him, though. That's what I'm saying. Like, exactly. He needs to be held. He needs, just as much as we should acknowledge that he's been solid this year, he needs to be held accountable for being inconsistent.
Do you think that him being more consistent and essentially more solid than he's been throughout his entire career has led to already higher expectations for him?
I don't think the expectations are that high.
I don't think they're that high, but I do think that they're higher now than they were this time last year.
I think that extended run, which was really good, November, right? Like, that extended run.
Yeah.
It created a bit of a floor, for what we should expect. And he hasn't stuck to that floor.
Yeah.
So, you're right. No, I did. I moved up. I came in with pretty low expectations for Andrew Wiggins.
As did I.
And then November happened, and I raised the bar.
Because he was legit good, like player of the week type good. He was really, really impressive for that stretch in November. And it is a little disheartening that he hasn't been able to find it. And I understand, listen, when Karl-Anthony Towns is not on the floor, it becomes much more difficult for him. And when he's been dealing with a couple different illnesses and a death in the family, none of that's easy. But it is a little disheartening that he hasn't been able to really show those same glimpses.
Do you agree with this? Andrew Wiggins could have had the season that Brandon Ingram is having.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
Right? Yeah. Like, doesn't that feel, I mean, like a high bar?
I mean, maybe I don't know that he would have quite the same opportunity Brandon Ingram is having. Where Brandon Ingram right now, especially because Zion is still yet to play, is no doubt about it their go-to, their number one right now, because Jrue Holiday is just fine not being that.
Yeah.
Here, Andrew's not going to be that because Carl exists.
See, but I agree with that, but I could spin that in another direction and say that he should have, the fact that he's out there with Carl should open up a cleaner opportunity.
I definitely agree. I agree with that. He should have.
We haven't seen that all year, by the way.
Yes.
Like, Cat and Wiggins have had very few games where they're both really good.
Yeah. That's been something that I do think is surprising, because you would think that just out of coincidence at some point it would happen. And it really hasn't happened too often this year. There's not one that I can really think of.
Those guys have never been.
In part because it's been a struggle to have them both on the floor together.
Yeah, this year, but in the past too. Like, Andrew's, I mean, I guess I'd have to go, I don't know, somebody could maybe call me out for this, but I don't think Andrew's flashes in the past have ever paralleled really strong play from Cat as well. Like,
I would have to look that up as well. I don't have an immediate answer to that.
To my mind, it doesn't. And even if it has once or twice, not as much as I guess we could rightfully expect. I mean, I just think he should get a lot of clean looks next to Karl-Anthony Towns. I mean, to take the Brandon Ingram example again, a lot of times the way he's guarded on that team is similar to the way James Harden is guarded.
Yeah.
Like, full-on face guarding, like throwing two guys double-teaming him, like, on the perimeter. Like, he's treated as a major weapon, and he has found ways to score in volume and do it efficiently.
Do you think it's unfair to say that Brandon Ingram has become the player that everyone thought Andrew Wiggins was going to be?
I don't think that's unfair
at all. Is it a stretch? Is it?
No. I mean, it's those two have always they've always had a parallel, right?
Yeah.
To be made between the two of them. And credit to Brandon Ingram, credit to the Pelicans staff finding that. I didn't expect this out of Brandon Ingram.
I thought he'd be better, but I didn't think he'd be. I also had questions about his injury that he had last year at the end of the year with the Lakers. So he was a giant question mark, in part because of that. It's like, is this guy going to be able to play?
Right.
Type thing. But I've been really impressed with him.
Right. And I just, I don't think it's unrealistic to say that if Andrew consistently finds that rhythm and is able to stay healthy for the second half of the year, that he could have a second half that is along the lines 90% of what Brandon Ingram has been for this first half of the year, which is a borderline all-star.
Yeah.
I just think, like, style of play, what should be open. I mean, the Pelicans games are him. He is taking hard shots.
Well, and I think that he can kind of control the game a little bit too.
Yeah.
And that's something I'd like to see more out of Andrew who is in control, because it's hard for a big guy to do that. It's hard for Towns to do that. Yep. Now, it's not taking anything away from Towns. It's just, it's a difficult thing to do at that position. Yeah. Like, it's just like it's really difficult to be a big guy on the best player on a championship winning team. You have to be the elite of the elite as a big guy. And that's something we're going to find out in the coming years about Towns. We don't know.
And about Jokic and about Embiid. I mean, exactly, about all these guys. Like,
and you have to be truly special. And that's not to take away from the other positions, because if you look at who have been the best players on title winning teams over the last decade, it's been LeBron, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Kawhi. Like, that's what the list is. So that's not to take away anything from that group, but I think it's more difficult at Carl's position than other ones. Next one I have is Jarrett Culver would be slowly coming along and still unable to find out how to shoot at the NBA level.
See, this one I missed on. I didn't think the shot was going to be this much of a problem.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was going to be above average. I didn't think it would be a night in, night out, even when he's playing well, issue. And so I don't know, like, the progression for him, I thought it would just be, he just kind of would be, find his way within a low usage role and be, you know, improve slightly over the course of the year. But it's been really up and down. I don't know. Yeah. I
think I had some concerns about his 3-point shooting maybe not being all that good. I didn't think he'd be shooting 43% of the free throw line. I did not see that coming. I don't think very many people did.
No, I mean, well, that, yeah. See, there's two issues with the shot. Is he's objectively has bad shooting form on jump shots, period.
He's got a terrible hitch in that shot.
Yeah, which, to defend myself a little bit, and you know this because we watch him shoot in warm-ups all the time in practice, that's not what it looks like all the time during warm-ups.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I was going off of, is when, like, in the summer, and I'm, you know, seeing him just some open gym shooting stuff. I'm like, that looks good enough to be like competent.
It's passable.
It looks like it, but then once he starts getting in the game, it is just not. It's hitchy. It's a whole bunch of different things. So that's an issue. The free throw line is a different issue because I think that's just in his head.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it, I'm not going to say this about all NBA players because some guys are just awful shooters. Like,
yeah,
nothing in Shaq's head was ever going to make him a good free throw shooter, right? But
do we just compare Culver to Shaq? Statistically,
statistically, it's not unfair. Yeah. But I do think that when you look at wings or guards that just can't really struggle to shoot from the line, it's either awful form at the line, which we've seen in the case of some guys, or it's all in their head. And I think with Culver that his free throw form doesn't look bad. It's all in his head.
He spoke today at Shoot Around a little, and what he mentioned was what things he needs to improve on is getting to the free throw line more. And that's just so true.
Yeah.
I mean, his jump shot will eventually be reworked, and in theory, he'll become a better shooter in future seasons. He can't reinvent his shot during the season this year.
No.
What he can do is become more of a driving weapon that gets to the free throw line. But when you factor in whatever's going on in his head at the free throw line, I mean, you know that thought when you last time you went to the free throw line, you missed both your free throws.
You don't want to go back.
You don't want. I mean, that's just a basketball thing, period. Like,
and
that's
I don't think that's a knock on Culver. I think that is I don't even think that this is how I don't think he even truly realizes that that's how you feel. It's just a natural thing.
Totally. And it's when you're 20, I'm sure it's even more that way.
Yeah.
Like he's well aware of the fact that he's shooting 40% from the free throw line. And that has like subconscious impact on the way you play basketball. It just does.
Yes. I do think that he has made growth in other areas though, especially he's played well recently, and I don't know that he'll ever turn into the player the Wolves were hoping they were picking at number six, but he has been better.
Okay. Little sidebar. Most likely player to regress once Towns and Wiggins are back, because I think Culver's a candidate for that.
I agree. Culver would be a candidate for that.
I mean, the players who've been playing really well, right, are Napier, Jang, Culver, and Covington, I would say, have been the four who have been the driving force.
I think Covington's the most likely to not,
agreed.
I guess the least likely would make more sense there, just because I think that, one, we've seen him play next to those guys more than, I mean, we've seen Gorgie play next to them too, but Shabazz and Culver really haven't to that extent, and I think that his game just fits in so well where he can catch and shoot, and he's
Covington
still going.
Is, yeah,
Robert Covington, that is. He can do all of those things that you want next to Andrew and Carl. So I think that he's the least likely to regress. Gorgie's interesting because I'm curious how much of, one, if he's ever going to play alongside Carl, and two, what his minutes are going to look like when Carl gets back. I think that that's something that has to be considered because he's, of that group, the most likely to lose minutes.
Totally.
And that is reason to, whether or not his play actually regresses, his numbers are going to go down just because his opportunities are going to regress. And that's something that has to be accounted for, I think. I don't know that Napier's going to regress. I actually think that he could fit in really well with that group still. So I would probably...
I mean, not the same shooting efficiency because he's been otherworldly, but...
Yeah.
But like, I agree what you're saying.
He will regress not because, now he's on the floor with those guys.
Yeah,
he'll
like
regress
fit,
because it's... Hey, you have to, right?
So your answer is Culver.
Culver or Gorgie, just because of the lack of opportunities.
I think Gorgie will be able to, Gorgie has been a guy where it's like really important to like kind of get a rhythm too and like know what his role is. So I'd like to think that Gorgie moving back into a 15-minute a night role could still be close to what he's been of late.
Mm-hmm.
I think Culver, I think the answer is Culver, and he has to prove us wrong.
Yeah.
That
and that's very fair.
Like, it's just the reason I think he could prove us wrong is because he's been so much more helpful defensively that has led in a way that has led to transition offense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just particularly now when he can get out and play with pace. It takes him out of the half court sets where he's asked to be a spot up shooter. And, you know, he playing faster will help him a lot. And I don't know. Will they get back to that? Once everyone's back, will he fit in? He's going to be a really interesting one to monitor here in the next month.
I do think it's worth mentioning just how good he's been at when he can get to the rim. I think he's improved in that area in terms of finishing. We've seen him getting far more dunks lately than really.
Only going to the right, though.
Yes, we talk
about that all the time.
That is still a problem, but mm-hmm. I think that he's having better success actually doing it now.
Yep, totally.
That's something that's definitely worth bringing up.
Yeah, and like we obviously point to the dunks, but in this case, normally it's stupid to just highlight highlights as reason for someone to be doing well, but those dunks all are illustrative of what good Culver looks like. It's finding a crease in the defense and punishing it by getting all the way to the rim.
And then staring down Robin Lopez.
And then staring to whoever, staring on anyone. Get there and do that. I mean, he can be that. And they need him to be that guy, the pressurizer of the rim.
Yes. Okay, next one, and this is, I think, a chance for you to take a victory lap here. Keelan Martin would look like a legitimate NBA player.
Yeah. No, you were there with me at Summer League. It was when you're watching those games, it's players pop.
Mm-hmm.
Players pop in a confidence standpoint. Everyone makes fun of Summer League, but the best player at Summer League this year, when you were watching that, was Kendrick Nunn.
Yep.
Just, you knew that. If you have any experience watching basketball, you go watch the Wolves play the Heat, you watch any of the Heat games, that's the best player. And Keelan Martin did the same thing on the Las Vegas Summer League team because he was so confident. And I think coupling that with his stroke had me encouraged that he was going to, and the role that we were going to have on this team that lacked, that was lacking shooters. I thought that he could be a player for this team. And I think I was a little bit wary when he started off 0 for 13 for three, but
starting to sweat.
Yeah. But since then, and he's just progressively added, right? He kind of seems to know what he's doing on defense a little bit more, not great, but a little more under control.
He looks like he belongs defensively now, and yeah. He did not look like he belonged in his first stint up here.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, man.
What they're going to do when he runs out of days.
Just saying, the Houston Rocket way was just to cycle through him.
I'll be very curious, because he looks like an NBA player. Now, I'm not saying that he is Daniel House or a legitimate good NBA player, but he looks like he belongs in the league, if nothing else.
Yeah, and then just at some point, he's going to run out of days, and it's going to be a question of, all right, do we give him a contract? And if we do that, who do we cut? You have to cut someone else on the roster. And that becomes the question there becomes, I think, three people: Jeff Teague, Jalen Noel, and Trevion Graham.
Yeah.
And Teague is just more complicated because the number's so big. And basically, if they're going to buy him out, they got to wait till the deadline. That's a month away. Keelan Martin's going to run out of days before.
You would have to stash him in Iowa for the next month.
Yeah, messy. And then people will probably say Trevion Graham, but I'm telling you, this staff likes him and likes his point. They think the point of attack defense is so important, and Trevion Graham is objectively better at that than Keelan Martin is.
Yes, I don't think it would be Jalen Noel though.
I'm just saying that's another one of the options. He doesn't have guaranteed money beyond this season.
Yeah.
I would like to. I mean, I'm not saying cut. It's just that's the decision.
No, and I understand that, and because of his contract is guaranteed this year and non guaranteed for the next 3 years, but I think actually because of that they would like to
agree
hang on to him and say okay, we don't
but
necessarily.
What if you can get Keelan to sign that same deal?
You might be able. Then why would you even? Then you could have more guys on that deal.
But then you got to cut someone. That's what I'm saying. So then who?
I just think it's easier to cut bait with somebody that's going to be gone after this year. Anyways,
the 45 days are going to force their hand to act at some point, whether that's a trade or a cut.
I think it would be after the trade deadline.
Because yeah, I really don't know.
I do think that they would try and stash him. All right, yeah. We got to move along a little bit. But Gorgui Dieng would be the defensive anchor and shooting clutch time three pointers.
Okay, the first part, I don't think is that shocking. I mean, Gorgui's been a solid defensive anchor his entire career, particularly when given consistent minutes.
Yeah.
Always been a great communicator. That part, doesn't surprise me. The shooting is somewhat of a surprise. He's taken more above the break threes this season already in 500 minutes than he has in his entire career combined, 6 years. But at the same time, it doesn't surprise me that they've asked him to start shooting above the break
threes.
I'm
not surprised that they've asked him to take threes from anywhere.
Right.
I'm surprised that he's taking them less than 5 minutes to score within five.
Yeah, right.
He's the guy that's been taking some big shots for this team, and that's surprising.
yeah, we kind of thought he'd be like a three-point shooter in the sense that like Aaron Baines and Jonas Valanciunas are three-point
shooters. Yeah, like you want to fire up one in the second quarter, go ahead.
Yeah, you're open. Like, yeah. But he's, I mean, but Gordy's been a shooter, man. He's always been a shooter from inside of the arc above the break. That was his shot. I mean, he was a close to 50% shooter from there. Like, it's not crazy to me that he's been able to step behind the arc and make some of those. The volume is crazy. Almost half of his shots this year are threes.
That's not something I would have expected at
me
all.
Neither.
I would have expected him to start taking them, but not nearly at the rate that he's taken them.
Right.
That's been pretty crazy. And as for the defense, that's not surprising. And you and I think, had a conversation prior to the season where trying to figure out the rotation. Like, we thought Gorgui was not going to be in the rotation. There was a time where he wasn't.
I think the staff thought he wasn't going to be.
Well, we thought, okay, well, he's going to fit into what they want to do defensively.
Yeah.
Just, can he play, one, at the pace they want to play at, two, just the system they want to play? Does he fit? And he does. I don't know.
What's the pace part? Do you think he can play?
I don't know that he does at the pace. He can fit into the system because he can't shoot. I don't know that he can play fast enough.
Yeah, I mean, I think he can. I think you got to be kind of patient with it. You got to try to be persistent with it.
Build it up.
Yeah, and it doesn't need to be that he's starting next to Cat and playing 30 minutes a night with Pace next to him. But if it's in a smaller role and you commit to it, like, I don't know. I think it could work. Obviously, it's not the same. It's not the archetype of second big they want. That looks like Robert Covington.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know. I'd like to see it. I think him and Cat have only shared the floor for 8 minutes this year.
It's not been much. Okay, last one I have before we get out of here. The Wolves would be sitting at 14-22 on January 9th in only two games out of a playoff spot.
Well, those are very, very different questions.
That's why I put it together.
14-22, that's fair. That's right on pace for the like 35.5 that Vegas had.
Very believable.
I thought they'd be a little bit better than that. So, but 14-22, no, that doesn't.
Not stunning.
Not stunning at all. The way in which they've got there with good, bad, good, terrible, solid has been a little bit surprising. But whatever, that's ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
So yeah, that isn't. But I mean, the West, we do that every year. I don't know why we do that every year. We determine how many playoff teams there are going to be before, and injuries and weird stuff happens every single year. And yeah, myself included, we shouldn't have glued in. I mean, I think we were sitting right here and I said, I think there's six teams that are locks for the playoffs, one of which was the Golden State Warriors.
And I had five because I didn't believe in the Warriors and I didn't think they'd be
I even think us being at 5 and 6 was low end for people.
Yeah.
I think
like
the mean or whatever was like, people like, there's seven spots locked.
There were some people ready to start the playoffs in October. Say, I got my eight teams, let's roll.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's just, that's 82 games is too long. Winning consistently is too hard. But it's been crazy. I love that it's like this.
Yeah,
it's fun.
That,
like, I mean, if you're,
although I wish they were a little better at the bottom of the Western playoff picture.
Yeah.
Like, 14-22 shouldn't be within, you know, shouting distance of a playoff spot. But
it's just
interesting.
It's a balancing. But it's been like that in the East forever.
Oh yeah, that's why it's been the JV conference.
Exactly. That's why I'm glad. You know, it's moved over this way. I think it makes it a little bit fun for the Timberwolves when they ride off two wins in a row. You look at the standings, you go, oh, they're only a game out of the playoffs. Like, that's fun. I think a team like Memphis right now can convince themselves, hey, you know, we put together a good second half of the year, we're going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
In year one of our rebuild, that's fun. Like, Phoenix was frisky at the beginning of the year, like in the playoff conversation. And any of those teams are, if they go win 10 of their next 15, they're in.
Yep.
They just are. And that little nugget of hope is that makes it more fun, I think, as a fan.
I bet Memphis would be so thrilled to hand over a non-lottery pick to Boston, too. I bet they would be so happy to do that.
Right?
That would be something.
Wouldn't they totally be in the playoffs if Andre Iguodala played this year?
Yeah.
And if they play Morant and Jackson intentionally, they like cap their minutes at like 28 a night.
Well, and Morant's injury issues.
Yeah, he's missed time. I mean, they're
fun.
Yeah, they're just a good team. I've liked watching them all year, and I'm not surprised the Wolves have lost to them three times.
No, it's they're talented. They're talented. Yeah. And they're fun. And Taylor Jenkins down there has them playing really hard.
Definitely.
All right, that's Dane Moore. You can find him on Twitter at DaneMooreNBA. You can find me on Twitter at RealDCunningham. We've got a game to get to, but you can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or the all-new Score North mobile app available for both Apple and Android devices. Be sure to download that, check that out, as well as subscribe to the podcast, and we will talk to you next time.